Very smooth start to a podcast. Episode number 45. You swearing just before I hit record. What did you just do?
I just fucking smashed my lights into my wall by accident. And you know the tables that we've got, these stand-up tables?
Yeah.
I haven't clamped it down. I just leant forward in excitement for this upcoming podcast and pushed the whole table into the wall. So hello, everybody. Hope you're good and welcome.
Do you remember that time where we were live on a call and my desk fell apart and like my camera?
Yeah. Crashed.
It was like I was obviously concerned that all the equipment on my table had broken and that I've got this complete mess of a setup now. And you're there laughing, being like, "What has just happened?" I might have caught it on record. Actually, I should try and find that.
Yeah, I think it was pretty funny for sure.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm good, thank you. We've just this is episode 45. We've had a little hiatus because we've been doing a challenge. And a challenge is something that we do once, three times a year. We do this big thing where we put on a free event for face-to-face coaches and show them what needs to be done to get fully booked. And often it means that we are both, or you particularly, are very busy. So we haven't hit record on the podcast for a while.
No, I think you showed up to do it once and I wasn't there. So apologies for that in advance. But yeah, it's been a very busy couple of weeks. With the challenge. Good fun though, right? A lot of new faces, a lot of wow moments for them, and obviously fantastic for us to see so many of them want to take their business to the next level and join the team.
Yeah, it's been really fun. I do enjoy it. We get a lot of good eggs come into the challenge, and obviously some of those good eggs, are excellent eggs, and they come and work with us, which is fab. So yeah, that's been really exciting, and we continue on. Mate, tell me about, before we get into, we're going to talk about some like selling stuff that we've been learning and teaching our guys about how to get more clients. You're going to speak about something else. What are you going to chat about today?
I don't know. I'll make it up when we get there. I'm going to talk about testing the market and the importance of that and not getting stuck in your own head.
But before we do those two things, you just before we hit record, you also showed me a latest picture of your fireplace. So just tell me about that for a minute and then we'll get into the juice.
Yeah, so we're nearly there. It's been about a 6-week project. That I thought would cost a few thousand pounds has gone on to cost many, many thousand pounds.
I just imagine now on Grand Designs. Do you know that when, what's the chap's name? The host.
Can't remember. I can see his face.
His name's escaped me. People listening to this podcast are shouting it in their car or on their walk right now. It'll come to me in a minute. Anyway, he's there, and I can just imagine you doing this. And he's like, okay, so you've got, this is what you want to do. You know, you want to get a log burner and you want to, you know, move that over here and replaster that and get that set up there. What's your budget? And then you say like £5,000. And then he's like, really? for that, you sure? Have you got any leeway? He's like, no, that's all the money I've got. And you can just see in that moment where almost every time he's like, you just don't have a clue about how this is going to pan out.
Yeah, we've gone easily double over budget, but we've that thing. I'm sure, again, if you're listening, you might get this. You start something and you think, well, it would be really nice to get real.
Kevin McLeod.
Oh right, okay, sorry. I thought that was just a random Tourette's like outburst there. We were getting these shelves, and I was like, well, it'd be really nice if we had solid oak shelves and we had them, you know, properly aged, and they were rustic and they were stained. Yeah. And all of a sudden the shelf that was going to cost £100 now cost £900. And, you know, it continues to grow from there. So we just ended up like leveling up on everything, but it does look amazing. And we're going to spark up tomorrow night. So can he wait?
Yeah. You're joining the Logburner crew and I'm excited.
Let's do it.
So tell me about your like what we want to do on this podcast is share stuff that we're actively working on and learning and in our growth with Velocity, but also stuff that our coaches inside Velocity are finding useful. So yours was a bit about letting the market teach you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a common thread that I've seen from people more recently, I don't know if there's any reason for it being more recent or just whether it's potluck, but seems to be a lot of people holding on to stuff and trying to dot every I and cross every T to within an inch of its life before releasing it to the world and seeing what they think of it. Yeah. And the same can be said for pricing as well. So if I give you an example, I spoke to somebody the other day who essentially said they've spent the last 2 years designing things, building it, getting it to the point where they're nearly ready to get it out there in terms of a personal training product, and then ripping it back down and starting again. And they've just kind of got stuck in this loop of trying to make it perfect. And my response to him was, perfect for who? Who are you trying to make it perfect for them, or are you trying to make it perfect for you? And it kind of stuck, it kind of got him to stop in his tracks slightly. And that was the outcome. And that was why I wanted to talk about it today, which is, you don't really know what they need and what they want, not fully. So create something, get it out there, give it a price tag, and let the market tell you whether it's right, whether it's priced correctly, and whether you need to work on anything from either product design or delivery or how you sell it. And that information you get, if you get that feedback correct and you keep working on it, you will just get better and better and better with that thing.
I've had a realization on this lesson as well, whereby even like there's a step before that that you could take, which is you ask people before you've even made it. And you said this to me the other day, actually, in a voice clip of an idea that we've been brewing up, which is, before you've even made it, go to your social, your email list, your class members, the, you know, your clients, whatever, and you just say, look, I'm thinking of designing and building this thing. Or it might be two options, right? You might be trying to decide, like, I'm thinking of doing this, whose objective is that, and this is what it does for you. Or I'm looking at building this service, which, yeah, this is how it looks. Which would you like? Like, which do you think is better? And then letting people decide, like, would you be interested? Would you want to do that thing if I made it? And you and I have definitely not always been in this mindset, because you and I have been there where we've like, let's design it and let's get it perfect in our own minds. And then later, you know, we'll think about marketing and testing it. Whereas I think you and I are coming full circle, which is to, like, you can have an idea and you could spend some time constructing it, how it would work and what would be involved and what the promise would be and what the deliverables would be. But you know, you want to cap that thinking time, get it out there and actually get some market recognition and some feedback that you described.
It's one of the reasons why Velocity came out probably 6 months after it should, because
we
did exactly that. You know, we spent a lot of time really kind of going over the fine details of getting this thing out there. And if we're honest with ourselves, if we rewind the clock, you know, 3 years, most, maybe not most of it, but probably 50% of what we created doesn't even exist in the program anymore, because we realized that that isn't what people need, or it isn't quite pitched in the right way for the type of people that we want to serve. So once again, team, learn from our fuck ups, please, and save yourself some time. So one of the concepts that I really love is the idea of minimal viable product. And I think, Dave, you call it like first shitty draft. Is a brilliant name for it. And it's like, yeah,
that came from Taki, that did. That was like, he was a genius at this. Just a little sidebar. He was the program. He ran the program Black Belt that Craig and I were part of for a while. And whenever we, like, I think he really helps us with that. That, you know, we're going to put this together. Don't, like, let's remove the expectations of perfection. Let's just get stuff out of your head. And the result was always much better than you thought it was going to be. And then you can always come back to it later and be like, cool, I'll brush over that and just like polish it a little bit. But again, it come to the punchline. It was helping you shorten the distance between having the idea and actually making it real. So good.
Yeah, it is. It's so powerful. So we get this product out there, which is not finished by any stretch. But then you start to get feedback. People start to tell you what it is that they're really, really enjoying. They might make a couple of suggestions. So they might say, oh, do you reckon, is there any chance that you could look at my nutrition like this? And you go, brilliant idea. If I'm going to do it for them, I might as well build something that does it for everybody. And now you've got something that supports that person and also everybody else that comes after. And it allows you to start basically making money before having to finish the entire project. By the time you finish it, if you wait that long, you probably need to get another full-time job anyway, because it's taken you so long to make it.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, it's really powerful. So I think hopefully if someone's going to take something from this little point that we're trying to communicate, is that maybe spend a little less time in your head and get the ideas and the ambitions and stuff, you know, the ideas you've got, and put them out and just put them to the test. And I think there's probably one other piece in here, as I talk about that there, that there's like the fear of rejection ultimately embedded within this, which is because if I do take it out of my head and I put it to my clients or I put it to my Instagram audience or whoever, and it bombs, what does that mean? Does that mean they don't like me? Does that mean that I'm not worthy? And like we catastrophize to this point where if this one idea that I have that I think could be really good doesn't work, what does that mean for me? Like, to cut to the chase doesn't mean a fucking thing. Like, it doesn't mean anything, because you can, like, ideas can come up like that. But the sooner you can get through the bad ones, like, you might have to cycle through 5, 10, 20 bad ones to get to one that hits, but it's so worth it when it does hit.
Like our very first idea of...
Oh, so bad.
Terrible. I don't even think we can air it, but we came up with some humdingers before we found, you know, the working project here that that now exists today. So yeah,
we so deluded. But that was the thing, like, if we never had started that, we could have been building that first iteration of Velocity for so long. But we did it and we ran that thing for several months until we realized, actually, this is pretty rubbish and this isn't going to get us where we want to be, so we have to pivot. And so, but point is, we could have sat there in design mode for fucking years before we launched it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same, just to finish this point up, the same can be said for your price. When you have something that's working and it's selling, like, go out there and get some no's. Go and challenge yourself on your price. Mm. If you're currently charging £30 an hour and the last 3 or 4 people that you've run, whatever your version of a consultation is, have all said yes, put it to 40 and see what happens. The worst that can happen is somebody says no, and then you realize when asking for feedback where you need to strengthen your case to get a conversion at 40 next time. Mm. Okay, I didn't get that one. I need to work on my sales skills. Okay, I didn't get that one because I don't actually have a community, and they said the community was really important to them. But if you were £30, they probably wouldn't have raised that. They would have just joined. And you've just had another person at that very low cost eking up your time and not learning anything and giving you the ability to grow. Yeah. So get out there and get some no's, challenge your price. And I guarantee you, if you have a good product and you know how to showcase that you can help somebody with the problem that they have, you'll be surprised at how high you can take your price point. But if you don't test the market, you'll never know.
That was a really good segue, talking about consultations, to the point that I've been thinking about a lot this week. In conversations with a lot of trainers at Velocity, we've been speaking about conversion rates of tasters and consultations, and some people like not converting as many as they would like. And I think there's a really nice simple way of giving yourself, like, reflecting on your current sales process, which I'd love to just talk through now. And so you've got the moment that we have in the consultation is the moment you say, here's my service, here's how much it costs, do you want in? Right, that's the kind of pivotal moment, right? You've got everything that happens before that, which is nurture, rapport building, establishing the bridge model of where they are now, where they want to get to, and what the plan is to get them there. And then after it, you've got payment, and then onboarding, and their onboarding journey, essentially, until they kind of get fully onboarded into the service. And what we found is that a lot of trainers are really good at the conversational bit. So getting them into the consult, building rapport, asking them the questions and gathering info. And after a bit of practice, they kind of get good at that. But the big gap that seems to be missing is that their ability to clearly and concisely explain to them the steps chronologically that would occur if and when they decide to join. Because there's a thing about, like, what will increase someone's probability of saying, yes, David, I'm in, is their how much they believe that you have what they need to achieve their goal. So that's like trust in your ability and your product and your service. And then there's like how strongly do I believe that I can do it. It's that perceived likelihood of achievement. And so, because you do this a lot with people that join Velocity, and you can literally say, when you sign up, here's the first 13 tasks on our onboarding page, step by step, chronological, nice and easy. And then you go here. And once you've got that, you're going to go there. And then you message this person. And it's like step by step, like round the Monopoly board. It's really simple.
Yeah.
And what I've been discussing is, like, if you can, and 3 is the magic number. So if you can pick out the first 3 key steps that the new client will take when they say yes, that they take in order that will simply move them in the direction of where they want to go. If you can describe those steps and make them really simple, really easy to do, and really logical, then it's going to massively increase your probability of getting a yes. But how do you find this point? Because you obviously do this on, you know, in terms of presenting an opportunity for people to join Velocity about that future pacing.
Well, interestingly, just before this podcast, I just spent 45 minutes doing exactly that with someone to the point where I felt they had absolutely no idea of the potential that they had, that I had to work with them to try and create that future, which is what I'm going to touch on in a second. And I've actually rebooked them to discuss whether joining our team is the right thing for them. That shows how important I think it is. You know, it wasn't the right time for me to suggest them coming to work with me or us because they weren't clear on what that would look like and where they would be going. So I would just be spouting off a list of features and cool things that we can do for them without any unified direction of actually where they're going to place that.
So, and they wouldn't know how to link themselves with those features if the plan of the thing they've got to do isn't clear.
Yeah, exactly. And they wouldn't know. Yeah, I wouldn't know how it was going to fit in. So we had to do that work first to, as I said, to paint future, which is essentially getting somebody to stop, zoom out and look ahead and say, well, if we can implement this, this and this, and if we relate it back to personal training, you know, we can get you stronger. If we get you stronger, then you're going to find that your knees hurt less. Then what we can do is we can start to look at jumping exercises again, because you're going to be able to support that. Then we can bring that back into some more functional movements and we can start moving a bit more laterally. And if we can get you moving a bit more laterally, I don't see any reason why we can't get you back on the tennis court. And now all of a sudden you've painted this journey and they're like, seriously, I can get back on the tennis court? Yeah, 100%.
And you've given them, like what you did there, a great example of how you can lay out quite simple steps that in their mind, like as long as you use words or have defined those terms like lateral or whatever, that they understand what they mean, then they can like, oh, what you've just described is logical. So it makes sense to me. It's rational that if I did this, that I did the work that Craig would just, you know, prescribe for me, I would be able to get back on the tennis court. It's not just, yeah, I can do it. Because if you don't have loads of social proof and videos and testimonials that you've done exactly that they've read before they've arrived, then you're going to have to be able to like paint the picture for them back on the court that gets them back on the court.
Totally. And that, you know, that can be said for any goal, right? So somebody comes in and they're very overweight, they're embarrassed about it, they lack confidence. Yeah. Say, well, listen, the first step is we're actually going to go and train in this room over here, which is very private. There's going to be us and maybe one or two others. That's where we're going to get started. And in there, we're going to start moving and getting, you know, just getting those movement patterns going, just getting you a little bit more comfortable, getting your hips to move, getting your spine to bend and opening up, you know, some core muscles that maybe you haven't used before. Now, I would anticipate after 4-6 weeks, there's going to be a lot of changes and you'll be ready to come into this room over here. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're going to start to move a little bit more weight. This is where we're going to really start to get some results. And they're seeing this journey unfold and they're believing it and feeling like, okay, yeah, that's a good, comfortable place for me there. They've clearly listened to the fact that I don't feel great about myself right now and I wouldn't feel comfortable in that room. So I think, yeah, going back to it, I think the terminology of painting future is absolutely the right wording on this.
And what you did there was you said, like, you went, we're going to go into that room. And like, if you're there in a consult in your gym, you've got the, like, this is really powerful for a face-to-face coach, because you're able to say, you're able to take them in that room and show them around and like give them a taste of the environment. And then when you say, we're going to be spending time in this zone on these pieces of equipment, doing this kind of stuff, as you're saying that, they're imagining themselves doing it. Yeah. If they can imagine themselves doing it, it makes it more likely that they will believe that they can do it. And that again, it's clear what needs to be done to get them to where they are. And the clearer that they are, you are, and they are on what needs to be done, the more likely they are going to say yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, if you're charging peanuts, you don't need to do any of this stuff, because what you'll do is you'll attract people that are looking for a bargain.
A peanut.
They're looking for a peanut. But if you're looking, if you want to charge a good fee and you provide a great service, you need to back that up with a story that you can tell. You need to back that up with being able to articulate and showcase very clearly why you charge what you charge and why it's worth that. And when you paint that future for them, and when you plant that seed of what the potential is for them, then when they hear your price, it's still going to be a larger number than they maybe were expecting, but they're going to be able to justify it. And they'll go, well, I get it, because this is exactly what I need. So I'll find the money. I'll make, you know, I can make this work.
This is a great illustration of the imbalance that we see a lot, where there are some brilliant coaches out there, amazing trainers that are so passionate about helping people. They know their shit, like their knowledge is insane about the body and health and fitness. But if you don't get this bit, if you can't bring someone in and talk them through, like having asked the questions and learned, developed understanding of their situation, of how they got to be where they are now and where they want to get to and all the obstacles, and then be able to walk people through this kind of imaginary journey, right, that you gave a great example to, and be able to relate that journey and what you'll do for them and how you'll support them to their unique like frustrations and obstacles and barriers, then you're never going to get the number of clients that you deserve. And so I think like this stuff that we share, that I hope is really helpful to people listening, can help take some of those amazing coaches and get them busier as they should be.
Yeah, that's ultimately what our kind of ethos is all about, isn't it? You know, taking passionate coaches that want to make a difference, and showing them how to actually build a life and a business that works for them, and doesn't mean that they need to leave the industry or support it with another job or settle for something that they don't want to settle for. You should be able to be a great coach working with a number of people, and within reason, buy the car that you want to buy, go on the holidays that you want to go on, pay your mortgage, and live a really comfortable life, because what you do is fucking amazing.
Yeah. And get yourself a log burner. Join the log burner crew. Yeah. That's what we should start talking about.
We're probably going to have to put a training in on that, actually, like around the 6K a month mark. Like the next step is you've got to get a log burner, otherwise you're out of the team.
Level up with a log burner.
There you go. That's the training. All right, Dean, thank you so much for listening. Hope that was enjoyable. Hopefully you got some insight from that. We'll look forward to catching you next time.
See you, people.